Welcome to the Crosslands Church podcast. Our mission, to help you experience the life with God you've been missing. And now, a message for you.
Well, good morning. Thanks for joining with us today. I hope you're having as much fun as we are. I've mentioned the past couple of weeks, you know, we'd love to have you post pictures of you watching the service on social media so that we can kind of sort of share the experience after the fact. I love seeing those. I want to start today, you see we're in a brand new sermon series, but I want to start by describing a movie that came out. It came out in 1980, back in 1980 when I was 10 years old. I had a paper route, and we would have to like sort the papers ahead of time, and I would look through like the interesting stuff, and I would always look at the movie listings. We weren't a real movie family, but I started noticing that there was this one movie that was playing every single day, and every day, there was a movie that played at the Bloor Cinema downtown Toronto for 3 years straight. The movie came out in 1980. It was called The Gods Must Be Crazy, and I want to describe a little bit of just the beginning of that movie. It's a high recommend. It's an odd little independent picture. But it starts by describing the life of a bushman in the Kalahari Desert, which is a very hostile place to live, and he lives in a sort of at a subsistence level with his tribe, and then it shifts from the Kalahari to a city in the south. And I'm going to read like right off the script, okay? What it says. There's part of this that's kind of funny. It says, only miles to the south, there's a vast city, and here you find civilized man. Civilized man refused to adapt himself to his environment. Instead, he adapted his environment to suit him. So he built cities, roads, vehicles, machinery, and he put up power lines to run his labor-saving devices, but he didn't know when to stop. The more he improved his surroundings to make life easier, the more complicated he made it. Now his children are sentenced to years of school to learn how to survive in this complex and hazardous habitat. And civilized man who refused to adapt to his surroundings now finds he has to adapt and readapt every hour of the day to his self-created environment. For instance, if it's Monday and 730 comes up, you have to disadapt from your domestic surroundings and readapt yourself to an entirely different environment. 800 means everybody has to look busy. 1030 means you can stop looking busy for minutes, and then you have to look busy again. And I love that it describes modern life where your life is run by the numbers that show up on a clock, and it tells you, the clock is telling us what to do. And busyness is both a complaint and a boast in our culture. You know, people say, how are you doing? How often do you answer, really busy? I'm guilty of saying that almost all the time. It almost implies, you know, look how important I am and look how much is required of me. And the reality is that busyness, when it's incessant, robs us of life. Quite a few years, it's got to be over 10 years ago now, we were having a Wednesday night worship practice in Theater One. And while we were in the practice, with all the doors closed, somebody came in through the main doors, went into Theater Two, and basically cleaned it out through the fire escape, through the fire exit. So they took the sound equipment, the speakers, TV, and we had no idea what was going on because we were too busy to notice. After that, we installed some security system and put measures in place where we would have an eye on what was going on. But the reality is that when we're busy, we can stop paying attention. We stop paying attention to our health. We stop paying attention to our family. We stop paying attention to our relationship with God. And the antidote to busyness is Sabbath. Sabbath rest. Now, the word Sabbath comes from the Hebrew word Shabbat, which literally means Saturday. In Hebrew culture and in Jewish culture today, it's a weekly day of rest. In Scripture, we see three reference to this. There are three things that Sabbath refers to. Two are explicit and obvious, and the third is a little bit more subtle. And so I'm going to talk about the first one today, the second one next week, and the third one the week after, and then we're going to probably recap it all on the fourth week. So the first referent of Sabbath is creation. It's mentioned right in Hebrew law. It's built into their schedule. It's in the Ten Commandments, keep the Sabbath. And so the first referent, I'm going to read it out of Exodus 31, 16 to 17, says this: the people of Israel must keep the Sabbath day by observing it from generation to generation. This is a covenant obligation for all time. It is a permanent sign of my covenant or agreement or contract with the people of Israel. For in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, but on the seventh day he stopped working and was refreshed. So there's a reference to creation there. There are actually two creation narratives in Genesis 1 and a little bit into chapter 2 is the first one, and then the rest of chapter 2 is the second one. And actually, we're going to talk about those, the first one this week, the second one next week. And I see these two creation narratives as parallel and complementary. I'm not sure that we're obligated to make them either sequential or to read them so literally we have to make them fit together, because they're saying different things, and it's important to understand what they're saying. So today we're looking at Genesis 1, and again, into a couple of verses into Genesis 2. So I'm not going to read Genesis 1. I'm going to read the finale of that first narrative, which is in Genesis 2, verses 1 to 3. So God has created everything. There's this pattern of creation, the 6 days, and then starting in the first verse of Genesis 2. So the creation of the heavens and the earth and everything in them was completed. On the seventh day, God had finished his work of creation, so he rested from all his work. And God blessed the seventh day and declared it holy, which means set apart or consecrated, because it was the day when he rested from all his work of creation. So the expectation of Sabbath is that we rest because God rested. If you look at a Jewish perspective of this, they would understand that God's work is the creation of something new. Okay, not so much the perpetuation of what is, but the creation of something new. So Colossians chapter 1 says that all things hold together in Christ, which is kind of like that's a maintaining, but it's not the creation of something new. And so what they would say in sort of a Jewish theological package would be that to rest is to not create something new. So to rest is to echo God's creative rest. Throughout the week, we engage in creation, which is God created us to be creators. But then on the seventh day, the Sabbath, we rest from creating something new. In 1999, Michelle and I had the opportunity to go to Israel. We were there for a couple of weeks, and the second last day we were there was Sabbath. The Jewish day starts at sundown, so Sabbath starts Friday night and ends at sundown on Saturday. And our tour guide said, when you go to the hotel, we were staying at the hotel downtown Jerusalem, can't remember what it was called now, but he said, make sure that you don't accidentally take the Sabbath elevator. And he had to explain what that was. So the Sabbath elevator is an elevator that stops at every floor. So if you're on the eighth floor and you get into that elevator, it's just going to go up, stop, up, stop, up, stop, all the way up to the eighth floor. And it can be tedious. And people that are tourists don't always know that. And they get stuck in the elevator and they go, oh, it takes forever to get to the eighth floor or whatever. And the reason is because to press a button is to make the machinery do something it wouldn't automatically do. So that's called a creative work. We're doing work by doing that. So all of the non-Jewish, like the tourists and all of that, or the non-Orthodox Jews, they would take the other elevators, go straight up to eight. But anybody who was a practicing Jew, practicing Sabbath in that way, they would take the Sabbath elevator so that they wouldn't have to do work. And there's all kinds of other restrictions and rules about how to not do work. What's interesting is in the Jewish religious practice, they've established all those rules to make sure they keep the law properly. And the Bible is actually not very specific at all about how to keep Sabbath. There's, I believe, only a few things that are mentioned. One is about carrying loads, gathering sticks, gathering food. Other than that, it's kind of like interpret. And so Jewish religion has interpreted very strictly on this. Now, I've wondered about this for a long time. I ask questions maybe that you're not supposed to ask. What does it mean that God rests? Is he tired? I think of the story I believe it's in 1 Kings, where Elijah, the prophet, in the northern kingdom of Israel, is challenging the prophets of Baal. So we have Israel as being, they're supposed to be worshiping the true God, but they keep worshiping these other local deities, these Baals. The word literally means Lord. And so the king had married a pagan, a Sidonian princess, and she was helping to implement pagan worship everywhere. And so Elijah, the prophet of the true God, says, okay, we're going to have a showdown. And he brings all the prophets together of Baal, and he says, you offer your sacrifice, I offer my sacrifice, but we're not going to light the fire, so we're going to expect the God we worship to light the fire. And they said, oh, this is a good thing. And so he challenges them on this, and he says, you guys go first. And they're doing all of their practices of worship, which were kind of extreme. They're dancing around, singing. They're trying to elicit a response from their God by singing and yelling and shouting and dancing and even cutting themselves. The idea being that they're trying to get his attention. Sometimes I think we have a paganized worship view of worship where try to get God to do what we want by singing right or worshiping like intensely or whatever. And that's not the way it works. But Elijah starts taunting them. He says, you should sing louder because if you actually look at the original language, the original context, he says, maybe your God has fallen asleep or maybe he's in the bathroom taking a dump. So, I mean, it's translated sort of around that, but that's what he's saying. Like maybe he's off on a trip and you need to get his attention, right? And it's a very pagan concept, but he's mocking them for their God being tired. And the long run is God himself shows up and lights Elijah's sacrifice. But that's not what we're talking about today. It doesn't make sense to me that God would be tired because he doesn't get tired. There's a psalm that says, where does my help come from? My help, look to the hills, where does my help come from? My help comes from the God of Israel who never sleeps nor slumbers. He doesn't get tired. So what does it mean that he rests? Did he rest the once? He created everything in 6 days, took one day off, and then went back to maintaining the universe? Does he continue to rest? Does he rest just on the one day a week according to our schedule? And then so he stops paying attention on that 1 week, which I don't understand that concept. Does he rest every seventh day? Has he rested since creation? So it's kind of like a deistic view where he sort of wound up the universe, he created everything, and then he sits back, which is completely foreign to both our understanding of who God is and our experience. When we understand God responding to prayer, he's engaged, he's active. So there's all kinds of problems to resolve. And the idea that God rested from working as if he is tired feeds into the way we look at Sabbath, the way we look at rest. So what we do, we look at Sabbath as either a vacation or we look at vacation like Sabbath. And the idea that it's a much needed rest from hard work. And so that's how we behave. We work till exhaustion, just looking ahead to the next time I can go on vacation and then crash and then go back to the rat race. And that's not how we were meant to live. That's not how God created us to be. There's also problems because Jesus himself claims that God is still working. He heals somebody on the Sabbath in the New Testament. He gets called to task for this. There's something actually very funny about this because in one of the stories where he heals somebody on the Sabbath, and the religious leaders, even the ones that are opposed to one another, they unite in their anger against Jesus. And he defends himself and says, shouldn't healing happen on the Sabbath instead of every day? Remember that they would look at rest as ceasing from doing creative work. When he heals somebody, that's creative work. And then one of the texts says that the people that all hated him, they got together and they started plotting his murder. So it's not okay to heal somebody, but it's okay to plot murder on the Sabbath? It's twisted. It's really messed up. But Jesus says in John 5:17, he says, my Father is always working and so am I. After healing on the Sabbath. On the Sabbath, God is still working. So let's go back to Genesis 2. We've already read this, going to read it again. So the creation of the heavens and the earth and everything in them was completed. On the seventh day, God had finished his work of creation. So he rested from all his work and God blessed the seventh day and declared it holy because it was the day when he rested from all his work of creation. One reason we miss what it means is because we don't understand the context in which it was written. The texts or the stories of Genesis 1 and 2 are very, very old. A lot of scholars believe that they were collected, collated, edited, put together, even as late as the Babylonian exile in the 500 BC to 400 BC. But the texts from which they originated are even older than that. And a lot of scholars believe that Genesis 2 is older than Genesis 1, but the people that collected it said, this is the order we're going to put it in for all kinds of good reasons. But the context of Genesis 1 is the context of a pagan culture. And in a pagan culture, there were specific ways that they understood the gods to be and how they worshiped those gods. And I want you to listen carefully to this, because in a pagan culture, they would build a temple to their god. And when the temple was completed, they would have an image of their god, which would be a statue or something, most likely a statue, and they would have a massive procession in which they would bring the image in a parade to the temple. They would bring it up to the front of the temple into the holy place, and they would install the image of their god in its place of rest. Okay, so you see what's going on there. We build the temple, and the image of our god is brought to its place of rest. That's the language being used in Genesis 1. We have to understand that Genesis 1 is written over against the pagan culture, saying that God himself is not a God of created things. He's the God who created things. He doesn't live in temples. The reality is if these texts were collected in the exile, the temple had been destroyed. And one of the biggest questions they face is, what do we do now that our temple is destroyed? How do we worship God? And one of the answers is, God does not live in stone temples. His temple is the whole world. Where he is worshiped is all of creation. God is not represented by a statue. The story is, in Genesis 1, God made man and woman to be in his image. So the worship of God is far more intimate when it comes to humanity. We don't worship an image of God that's out there or a stone representation of him or a gold representation of him. He doesn't live in a localized temple where we need to go. God is worshipped in all of creation, and his image is humanity. And the world itself is his place of rest, because that is the temple. So the meaning has a lot less to do with how much work you do and how you respond to the work you do than it has to do with worship. That is what Sabbath is all about. His temple is the whole earth. His image is mankind. And Genesis 1 and 2 make very clear that God's intention is to live with mankind. Now, when the story of Adam and Eve's disobedience tells us very clearly that that intention was broken. Adam and Eve were driven out of the garden. That's the Genesis 2 narrative, which we're not talking about today. But that the relationship with God is broken, but God's intention was always and is always to live with mankind. So how do we rest? How do we do this? I was having a conversation with somebody yesterday, and it was a text conversation, and they were talking about the challenges of the numbers that we face, specifically referring to age. You hit certain ages and it's hard. And they were talking about somebody else and how they were having a hard time with hitting a certain age. And they said this: self-reflection is not always helpful. Self-reflection is not always helpful. What does it mean to reflect? In one sense, it means to look like, to imitate, to demonstrate. You look at your reflection in the mirror, it shows you who you are, but when you move, the mirror moves as you do, and you see reflection. But it all, to reflect also means to think about, to ponder, to meditate on. And so the first, in this context, the first example of reflection, the first meaning of reflection is a result of the second. When we ponder about, when we meditate on, when we think about God, certainly in partnership with him, we begin to reflect him in the way we act. Our reflection of God is a result of reflecting on God. So when you reflect on yourself, you can be caught in this diminishing circle. I'm reflecting myself, which is, it's a pretty limiting thing. And I find that the more we reflect on ourselves, we wind up with regret, dissatisfaction, self-loathing even. And so self-reflection can be, it's not inherently a bad thing, but if that's an end to itself, it can be very, very limiting when it comes to who we are. Many Sabbath passages, when you look at Leviticus and Exodus, and even in some of the prophets later on in the Old Testament, some of the expectation of Sabbath rest is to deny yourself. Self-reflection can be about self-absorption. But Sabbath rest is to deny yourself. Well, how is that restful? I want to contrast that to deny yourself to some of our cultural messages, because worship is inherent to what it means to be a human being. The question is not, do you worship or are you a worshiper? The question is, what do you worship or who do you worship? Jesus, talking to the woman at the well, says, God is seeking worshipers who will worship in spirit and in truth. He doesn't say he's seeking worshipers, people that will worship. He's saying he's seeking worshipers that will worship him in the right way. Every person is a worshiper. And the gods of our culture, I've mentioned this before, there's, you know, the grand trinity of money, power and pleasure, and there's all kinds of manifestations of that, sub-deities, if you will, like sex and entertainment and all of that. But at the core of all of that is, you could almost nail that down to the worship of self, that we pursue what we want. Since the beginning of the COVID crisis in Canada, Quebec has been hit the hardest. And it's probably close to a month now where everybody was locking down. And there's this weird paradox where some people are sitting at home with nothing to do, but the people that are working in essential services are working their butts off. And the city of Montreal actually imposed a very old rule that had long ago gone by the wayside, where they said, we're going to make sure that stores stay closed on Sundays, going to give people one day of rest. I don't know if you heard about that. I was seeing it on Facebook, and there were other pastors and Christians going, yeah, that's great. Look, we're reinstituting the day of rest. And I'm thinking, like, don't celebrate too quickly the reintroduction of a Christianized culture rule if the meaning of it doesn't accompany the rule. It's just a day off. I'm not saying it's bad. I'm not saying it's not helpful. But the purpose of Sabbath is not just about a day off. Let me explain. Here, there's a couple of cultural stories that we have. One of the cultural stories is that your value isn't what you produce. So how much do you earn? How much do you make? What value do you have to society? And it's really easy to fall into that, even as followers of Christians. We were at the Global Leadership Summit a few years ago, and it's a Christian leadership thing that was put on. And one of the speakers spoke about incorporating white space into your day. And the idea is this: you're working busy, 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 busy. It's very helpful to take a break, so sort of like, clean out your mind, think about something that's not work-related, even just sit blank for about 5 to 10 minutes, because that can restore your capacity. It can restore your productivity. Okay, so the end goal is just to make you more productive, right? And really, that was the message. You want to be more productive. Put in white space. But really, it just defaults to this cultural story that you are there to produce. Have rest so you produce more. Now, as much as proper rest, you know, physical, mental, spiritual rest, makes us a better producer, we don't rest just to produce better or more. That's not the function of rest. Our culture says that the essence of being human is to strive to experience and to enjoy. There was a Star Trek Next Generation episode on eons ago. It might have been one of the movies where Captain Picard's nephew died at a young age, and he was broken over this. He was mourning the loss of his nephew's death. And the reason that he gave explicitly was that he has missed out on so many experiences, as if the sum of our experiences makes up who we are. Now, we may enjoy rest, and we do, and we should enjoy rest, but we don't rest just for enjoyment. Another cultural message is that you've heard this one: if you have your health, you have nothing. And that means both physical and mental. And so the cultural expectation of rest is that it's all about ourselves, part of the package of self-care. Self-care means have a bubble bath with candles. It means binge a Netflix show. People that are more serious about self-care would say get some exercise, maybe even get counseling. Take care of yourself. Now, as much as proper rest, physical, mental, spiritual, it increases our psychological well-being, we don't rest simply to pursue psychological well-being. All those things are selfish. The messages of our culture reduce humanity. Hear this: the message of our culture reduces you to being an economic producer or a well-run biological machine or the product of your positive feelings. And that's it. The garden story is different. God made people so he could live with people in loving relationship. Now, the curse broke that. The disobedience to God broke that. But our Sabbath rest, when we do this properly, it looks back to God's garden intent. When we rest in the way that God intended, we reflect on God, and we come to reflect God. We fulfill our core identity as his image. We were made to be in relationship with a loving creator that made us to love us, and we were made to reflect him to one another and all of creation. That is the core of what it means to be human, and Sabbath rest reminds us of that. It re-implements that in our lives. We need to do that repeatedly, over and over and over. To reflect God and to reflect on God is to remind us of his place in the universe. Now, what does that mean for our present culture, our present situation, even the COVID crisis? People are looking to all kinds of things as the answer. Technology, the economy, money. In fact, some of our conflicting choices and values that we have right now are centered on exactly that. What's more important? What is best for the economy? Physical safety of everybody or the economy? When that goes to pot, people are going to suffer. How do we alleviate suffering the best? And the tools are, there's all these goals and intentions there. But we, as followers of Jesus, we have to understand that God is at the top. He's in control of the universe, of our culture. His ways are the ways that work, and not just the culture, but in our individual lives. How do we live that out in our daily lives, in our weekly lives, in our monthly lives? To reflect God is to, and to reflect on Him is to look back to the garden, God's intention for us. It also looks toward what God made possible, because Adam, as the image of God, he broke that through his disobedience. And we all continue to break that. I don't know what you think about, inherited guilt or whatever. I'm not sure that matters to the extent that we all know we've done things wrong. We all know that we've done things that have damaged our own lives. They've damaged relationships with other people. And we need a solution. And the solution is Jesus. There's a reason why Scripture says that Jesus is the image of God. Because Jesus is the restoration of the intention that was for Adam. Jesus is the answer to the intention for us. And when we are in Christ, when we are in Him, when He becomes our identity, we are moving towards a restoration of us living out the image of God. So the acknowledgement of God in His rightful place, there's a very simple word that describes what that is. When we acknowledge that God is the one in charge of the universe and our lives, we call that worship. We call that expressing the worship of God. Sabbath rest is worship. Now, you may think of worship as singing songs and all that. That's fine. Praise, how we praise, is worship expressed. But, there's a pastor I know who said this line. I've never forgotten. It was brilliant. How you live is your highest expression of worship. Okay, it was Pastor Wade that said that. He said that years ago. Never forgotten it. How you live is your highest expression of worship. And when we rest, we are worshiping, because when we rest in the way that God intends, because we take the attention away from ourselves. We're not self-reflecting. We're not nasal-gaving. I'm just going to stop now. We're not navel-gazing. We're giving our attention to God. And it's in the forgetting ourselves and giving our attention to God that we're actually found, that we actually find out who we are. So how do you do this? Especially when the contexts are so different. So I'm talking to two completely different kinds of people. There are people who are bored and there are people who are busy right now. There are people who are working real hard. Some people are stuck at home, trying to maintain some sort of semblance of continuity and meaning in their lives with kind of nothing to do. And there are people that are working really hard. There was a study that I saw very recently that suggested that those who are working from home are working 3 more hours per week than they were when they were working in the office. Now, I look at it and go, okay, but if you're not commuting to the city, it's still a win because you gain all that commuting time back. But there's a struggle that people have with home life, home life and work life balance. How do you balance that? Because the work just intrudes all the time. So how do you do this? How do you do Sabbath rest? I'm going to give you 3 interpretations, 3 options. I'm not going to tell you which one is the right one. I'm going to tell you them, and I'm going to rip them all apart, because I'm going to try to give you more practical stuff over the next couple of weeks. So the first one is, it's one day a week. It's one day a week, and it has to be a specific day. It has to be Sunday, which is kind of funny because Sabbath means Saturday. So there's a change at some point. I heard a message recently about the Ten Commandments, talking about the importance of keeping the law, and which, as followers of Jesus, we are required to be submitted to Jesus, not submitted to a set of rules. Even the Ten Commandments, people have a really hard time with that. But it's funny, because this pastor was preaching and he was saying, we are still responsible for the Ten Commandments, well, except for the Sabbath one. That one's kind of changed. Okay, it's been redefined somehow, and there's very legitimate passages you could point to for that. For me, and I've had these conversations with people, for the past 18 years, maybe, no, over 20 years, I've been in full-time ministry for over 20 years. Sunday tends to be my busiest day of the week. So what does that mean? So here I am trying to say, hey, follow Jesus as I follow Jesus, but don't do what I do on Sunday, because Sunday's my busiest day of the week. You should be resting. It's messed up. I remember I was locking up one day here, and we had a guy that went to our church, and he was doing all of our landscaping volunteer. He said, I want to give this to the church. And so he would come in with all his equipment, and Sunday was day of worship. He would do it on Sundays. And so I was locking up, and he's out there already. You know, you can hear the lawnmower going, and there was an older guy, and he was saying goodbye, and he was last one out. And he said, you know, I kind of have a problem with what's going on out there. And I thought, oh, I think I know where he's going with this. And I was right. I said, well, what do you mean? He says, well, he's working on a Sunday. I said, I work on a Sunday. It's my busiest day of the week. And he said, yeah, but you're a pastor. You're doing spiritual things. Oh, so there's spiritual and non-spiritual as a follower of Jesus. And I think he meant he was doing physical labor. I said, when you look at the Old Testament, like the priests are doing sacrifices on Sunday. They're working hard. Like they're working up a sweat. They're you know, mopping up blood and all that other stuff. Like it was a lot of hard work that they did. And anyway, the conversation went on, and finally he said, "Yeah, I don't think you and I are going to be on the same page on this." But I thought, how do we make that distinction? I don't know the heart of the person that was doing the landscaping. Maybe he saw this as an expression of his worship. I'm doing this for free for the church because this is my act of worship. And so, pointing to Saturday or Sunday, and people, this can be very divisive in conversations with people. I'm not sure that's what it's specifically about. But here's another one. Okay, you have to rest one day a week, but it doesn't matter which day. Paul says, I think in Colossians or Corinthians, he says, you know, some people esteem one day of the week better than others, and other people don't, which implies that it isn't about the same day every week, but you should have a day a week. Could be a healthy practice. For me, it's Monday. When Sunday's done, Monday is my day of rest. It could very easily turn into I do what I want on Monday, because that's how our culture looks at rest, instead of reflecting on God and learning to reflect God. This could be difficult if you're in a crisis. If you have a regular day of rest and your spouse crashes the car and they phone you up on the cell and you go, I don't know if you know this, but Monday's my day off, not working. Yeah, we don't do that. And then there are people who are parents with young children. They need your attention, and you can't just say, go away, it's my day of rest. Maybe you're responsible for somebody who's older with special needs. It's very hard to implement a full day of rest, or if you're caring for an older family member. And so it's really easy for somebody who has access to that kind of schedule of rest to tell somebody else to do it. But when you're in those situations, it's really hard. So here's a third one. And again, I'm not going to give you the answer here. Third one is an attitude of Sabbath that actively punctuates our lives regularly. And I mean regularly. I don't mean like every 6 months. So it isn't limited to the schedule of a day a week. There are challenges. How do you keep this from falling off the table? For me, on a daily basis, first thing in the morning, I try to have my devotional time with God. I've heard people say, you know, do an hour a day or more. Do a day a month, do a week a year. That's not vacation. It's specifically time to reflect on God and learn to reflect Him. I hope that's somewhat practical, that there isn't a hard answer for that, because doing it is more art than science. And we will talk about this more, but I know this. You're not practicing Sabbath if you're just checking a box, yes, I did it. You watch your watch and you go, okay, did the hour. Man, I made it through that. And if you're just checking the box, it's not Sabbath rest. There are specific things we can do in our rest, if you set aside time, that help us to reflect on God so that we turn from ourselves and make it not about us and actually making it about Him. A couple of simple things, okay? Still yourself. Our minds are active all the time. Here's an active strategy. If you have something that keeps coming up, I forgot to get the oil change. And you're trying to spend time with God, but the oil change keeps coming up. Write it down. And you say, okay, I wrote it down. When I'm done this time with God, I will come back to my list and see all the things that kept on interrupting me mentally. It's really hard to turn your mind off. And your mind is always grabbing your attention to make you think about you and the things around you. So still yourself. Breathe deeply. And I mean, like, when you yawn, your stomach pops out because the air is going all the way down. Sometimes you say breathe deeply and people's shoulders go up. That's when you're tense. That's when you're, you know, running a marathon. You got to get oxygen in as quick as possible. You want the long, slow, deep breath all the way to the bottom. Breathe deeply. Still your mind. Welcome God's presence. Second thing is play some worship music. I don't mean get piano lessons. I mean, we all have access to music on Apple Music or YouTube or whatever. Put it on and let that help your mind put attention to God. And the third thing is, and this is just a practice that helps to discipline your mind, write out prayers to God. Sometimes, and I totally get this. When I pray to God, I'm praying just a prayer of worship or prayer of somebody else and the car needs an oil change and, oh shoot, on the way to the oil change, I got to do. And all of a sudden I've gone from prayer to I'm back in my own thoughts again. When you write it down, it gives you the capability of focusing because you're in the act of writing it. I want to reaffirm this. Sabbath rest is worship. It's reflecting on God. It's reflecting God. It's trust, because when I stop being active in the work, I have to trust that God is doing what he's doing, and I'm trusting that he can do what I can't do. Yes, we have to be active. We have to do things. We have to be responsible, but we can take breaks from what we do so we can express our trust to God. It alleviates our worry. I stop my busyness to acknowledge God's rule over the world. And that carries the implication that money doesn't rule the world. Entertainment doesn't rule the world. The political power doesn't rule the world. I'm taking time to remind myself God is in charge. The Christian version of this is how his spirit is in us in fulfillment of that intention for God to live among humans, that garden ideal. You may say, well, if we can do this, why is the world still in a mess? And we are going to talk about that in the next couple of weeks and how we respond to that. I have a couple of text messages before we do our sort of closing ceremonies. Loving the quarantine beard. I appreciate that. Tell my wife I do not know how long this is going to last because the discontent is starting to set in. So I may look younger next week. Why do Christians rest on Sunday and not the seventh day of the week, Saturday? Okay, it's not exactly clear, but this is what I think happened historically. So the early church was primarily Jewish, and so the church would practice Sabbath together. But they would also, when the church started, it was Jewish. It wasn't a new religion. It was Jews getting together saying, we recognize Jesus as the Messiah. And when Gentiles came in, Gentiles became followers of Jesus, they would celebrate everybody together, Jew and Gentile together, on what they called the first day of the week. That was the day that commemorated Jesus' resurrection, the first day of the week. So the seventh day of the week was Jewish Sabbath. The first day of the week was followers of Jesus coming together to worship. And that's how the transition happened, because the church became gradually, those lines started setting in between followers of Jesus and Judaism as it was. They were distinguished from each other. And so the Sabbath practice was lost as the church became increasingly Gentile. That's a simple answer. It's simply history. And there will be people that say that God cares about the one day of the week and not the other. And you can have long, long conversations about that. I appreciate the question because I didn't have that in my notes. That's how the shift happened. I want to address those of you who may not be a follower of Jesus, and maybe you're tuning in, maybe you're curious, or maybe somebody is making you watch, and you know the busyness, because this is endemic to our culture. This is, every one of us experiences that busyness. As soon as you hit, I think it's high school, you start getting busy, right? Before that, it's like, yeah, your time is your own, and all of a sudden you hit high school. So those of you who are like grade 8, grade 7, grade 6, grade 5, you're kind of following along. Maybe you don't identify that. You will. One day you will. And busyness becomes the hallmark of how we live in our culture. And maybe the concept of rest is foreign to you. This is God's intention. God made us to live in relationship with him. And that busyness is part of that curse, that self-destructive trajectory of the universe and our individual lives. God sent Jesus to rescue us from that. The whole point of Jesus coming to die was to break that power. And through his resurrection, that power was broken. And so you don't have to live the rat race. You were made to live in relationship with God in peace and hope and joy and love. How do you do it? It's as simple as ABC. A, acknowledge your need for God. The way I'm doing it is not working. I'm tired of this rat race. I'm tired of working for a paycheck just so that I can retire and then not know what to do or go on cruises or whatever. It's so empty. You were made to live with God. B, believe that God has something better for you, that through Jesus' death and resurrection, you have access to that relationship that he made you for, and then C, commit to him, which means you're on a whole new path. You're not doing the same things the same way anymore. I mean, there's a journey there. This is just the starting point of that journey. But if you want to do that today, I would welcome you to pray a prayer, something like this. Father, I'm tired of living the restless, busy life. I want the life that you have for me. I know that I've been on a self-destructive trajectory. I want to say yes to the life that you have for me through Jesus, and I'm committing myself to you today. Amen. You say amen because you know that's the end. If you did that today for the first time, I want you to go into crosslands.live, Claudette mentioned it earlier, and click the box that says follow Jesus, because we all need help in this journey. We are a community of followers of Jesus who are striving to follow Jesus together. We need one another, and we want to help you with that. We want to celebrate with you being part of a whole new family, God's family on earth. And So click that box. Give us your contact information. We want to plug you in. We want to encourage you, and just do that. We celebrate that every time this happens. And I want to close today with prayer. Before I do, I want to give a quick shout out to on crosslands.live. There's message notes. Sunday morning message, I think it's called. And there is a supplementary reading there. There's a book that I want to recommend by Mark Buchanan, who's a Canadian, called The Rest of God. It means the rest that God offers. It doesn't mean it's a sequel to the first part of God. That's a bad joke. Anyway, go into crosslands.live. There's an Amazon link from there. It's I would highly recommend reading that book. It's a strange read because it's not the kind of book you want to read through quickly. It kind of meanders a little bit, but it's about how we can actively enjoy and live out the Sabbath rest that God has intended for us. I'm going to close in prayer, but immediately after the service, like we do every week, I would encourage you to stay and pray. Engage with the topic today. God may be challenging you in a new way today to do something you haven't done before, to make a change, to adjust your habits, to create space and spaces in your life in which you can experience that Sabbath rest. And so do business with him. Spend some time. We have, you know, the music keeps going at the end. It's kind of like prayer room in your living room. And so I would encourage you to do that. And so I'm just going to close in prayer. As soon as I pray, the service will be done. But stick around and pray. Father, I thank you that you made us to love us. I thank you that you have a purpose for us that goes beyond being a biological machine or an economic producer or just the result of the chemicals in our brain that make us feel good or bad. That you created us with an identity and a relationship. You created us out of love and that we can know that love. Father, I ask today that this would be a reality in our lives, that we would do what we need to do, that space would be available for us to meet with you. Father, move us from busyness to rest. Move us from that frantic life to peace and effectiveness and purpose. I thank you so much that you care for us, that you are on our side, that you are for us, and that in you we have life and hope and peace and love. Make that our reality. In Jesus' name, amen.
You've been listening to the Crosslands Church podcast. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes or the Google Play Store so that it comes straight to your device. And to find out more about Crosslands Church, you can visit us at crosslands.ca. Join us next week for another message to help you experience the life with God you've been missing.